Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly legislative podcast. I'm John Pimble. In an election, for a mail-in ballot to be counted, it must enter the postal system no later than the day before the election. When it arrives at a county auditor, it must have a postmark. If not, the ballot is likely tossed unless a barcode on the envelope can verify it was mailed on time. But what kind of barcode actually counts? That question was asked at great length. Let's back things up to January.
We'll call the Election Contest Committee meeting to order.
Republican Representative Stephen Holt chairs a special five-member House committee during the first week of the session. Three are Republicans. Two are Democrats. Their role is to determine what to do with 29 mail-in ballots that arrived in Winnesheek County without postmarks during the November election.
This contest of the Iowa House District 55 election comes down to 29 ballots in Winnesheek County.
Attorney Shayla McCormally represents the challenger candidate for House District 55, who was declared to have lost by 9 votes. Mail-in ballots that arrived without postmarks were tossed, but the challenger sued, claiming barcodes printed on the envelopes can verify if the ballots were mailed by the deadline. A postal service scanned them and determined 29 mail-in ballots were mailed by the legal deadline. But lawyer Matthew McDermott says,
I do not think that that's an intelligent mail barcode for purposes of Section 53.17.
An intelligent mail barcode is set up by someone who wants to send mail by registering with the post office. They print a code on the envelope, so when it is placed in the mail system, it can be traced. The Winnesheek County Auditor did not have an intelligent mail barcode system set up. While the Postal Service verified 29 ballots were sent by the deadline, Representative Stephen Holt says because they were not sent using an intelligent mail barcode system registered to the county auditor,
we lack the legal authority to open these ballots.
This special committee recommendation is brought before the full House of Representatives for a vote. During the House debate, a 2016 law is referred to with language about an intelligent mail barcode. Democratic Representative Rick Olson says there is some ambiguity as to what it means as written in code and administrative rules.
But in the Iowa administrative rules, it doesn't talk about an intelligent mail barcode. In the rules, it talks about the intelligent mail barcode tracing system.
But by the end of the debate,
the ballots in question did not have on them an intelligent mail barcode that was purchased by an auditor.
All Republicans voting choose not to open the ballots, and all Democrats vote to open. This party line vote was expected, and so was new legislation to clarify what to do in the future.
The subcommittee hearing is convened for House File 608.
This week, Republican Representative John Jacobson chairs a state government subcommittee. Also on this panel is Democratic Representative Bruce Hunter.
We obviously had an election where there were some votes that didn't get counted. If you look statewide, there's probably close to 1,200 ballots that may have been everything done right to, submitted on time, but didn't get counted because of an ambiguity in the law.
Hunter says a bipartisan effort will clarify how to treat mail-in ballots.
Representative Holt and I, pretty much a couple days after this debate, got together and decided between the two of us we do not want what happened in Winnesheek County to happen again. And that's kind of the genesis of this bill.
Today, only a handful of Iowa's county auditors are registered to trace and place barcodes on envelopes for ballots. Representative Jacobson cites the 2000 presidential election, where the outcome came down to votes in Florida. It was a tight race and was eventually decided by a United States Supreme Court ruling.
It explicitly said that you cannot have different counting standards between and among counties. If you know, they were treating 5 counties in Florida differently from the other 61 counties in Florida. The most difficult thing about the situation in District 55, of course, was that we were asked to adopt 3 different counting standards in three different counties.
In November, in Winneshiek County, ballots without a postmark were tossed. But in Fayette County, 12 ballots without a postmark were mistakenly counted and could not be removed from the final count.
That's a terribly unfortunate situation when people, through no fault of their own, did attempt to get their ballots in. So this is a comprehensive attempt to solve this.
Woodbury County is one of the few counties that has implemented the intelligent mail barcode system. County Auditor Pat Gill says it has been very successful there.
In 2018, we had 9 ballots that came in that were not postmarked, and it took me 15 minutes to run a report and determine that those ballots weren't in the system prior to Election Day. But it felt very good about the fact that we knew for sure whether those ballots should be rejected or not. But it's a system that we implemented, and it does work. It's successful.
When an auditor registers, they can trace mail that includes a barcode they printed on the envelope before it was sent to voters. Gill says the cost for his county to do this was low.
It didn't. To sign up with the Postal Service didn't cost me anything. What I did was I sent over 100,000 ballots over to a local vendor, sprayed that IMB code on it for 2 cents. So it cost me $2,000, and that's going to last me for about 4 years of elections.
Bremer County Auditor Shelley Wolf says her region used the intelligent mail barcode system last year, but they weren't able to trace mail.
I tend to lean a little more towards the sure count deadline, having them all in by election, the end of polls closing on election day, but I also understand I don't want anybody's vote to not count.
Wolf says their system now works properly after getting more help from the Postal Service. Heidi Burhans from the Secretary of State's office says her department will help counties set up a barcode system in the future.
And we would work very closely with the auditors throughout the year, working with them to make sure they understand the process based on the information we receive with the USPS and the conversations we have with them. We've already received comprehensive reports on what it takes to set up the intelligent mail barcode. And we're also becoming all the time more familiar with their jargon and their definitions. So we would really play that role of kind of the liaison between the USPS and the auditors to make sure that all definitions are always being understood and that the auditors understand what it takes to meet the requirements. And so there would be the continuous training.
The bill, as written for the subcommittee, isn't clear as to whether it should be mandated in all counties and exactly when it should begin. But the 3-panel subcommittee advances the bill. 2 hours later, the full state government committee meets, and the bill is presented with amendments presented by Representative Hunter.
This amendment leaves no doubt it is a mandate. It says that each commissioner shall use the postal code as specified in the bill, and they will give a notice to the Secretary of State on or before October 1st of 2020 to let them know that, yes, indeed, they are using the postal code and how they're using it.
This bill, as amended, unanimously passes the committee. It is now eligible for debate in the full House chamber. This bill also passes what is known as a funnel deadline. March 8th was the deadline for most bills and resolutions to pass a House or Senate full committee. Those that haven't are no longer eligible for a subcommittee. Exceptions include appropriations, ways and means, and government oversight. There are others as well. The 2019 Iowa legislative session is scheduled for 110 days, which is 16 weeks. It may be shorter or longer. Typically, issues concerning the state budget are the final bit of business passed during a session. You are listening to the podcast Under the Golden Dome, Week 8, from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pimble. In 2012, a bill became law that included a section making it a crime to seek employment at an agriculture facility for the purpose of conducting an undercover investigation. In January, A federal court decision declared it unconstitutional.
I think that we've got a much narrowly defined bill than we had a few years ago.
Republican Representative Jared Klein chairs an agriculture subcommittee for a bill prohibiting trespass on an agriculture production facility if a person lies to gain access and causes physical or economic harm to the operation. It also says it can become a serious misdemeanor if a person's actions cause injury to the business interest of the company. Representative Klein says this bill is necessary because agriculture is a prominent industry in Iowa.
So we have to be diligent to make sure that people that are wanting to cause harm, wanting to lie, wanting to deceive, we aren't enabling that to happen, because in some ways we are today. And that's what we're trying to get to, is to make sure we're not enabling those bad actors to go in, receive employment, and then go out and make videos, doctor things, who don't really have the intent of animal welfare in mind, because a lot of times they're going to, well, I think you guys pointed out, 6 to 8 weeks before they actually reported the abuse.
In 2009, an activist from Mercy for Animals working at an Iowa egg hatchery shot undercover video of hundreds of live baby chicks being ground up. While this practice of euthanizing male chicks is common, it showed it to many people who were unaware. Drew Mogler is a lobbyist with the Iowa Pork Producers Association.
Recently, Mercy for Animals was running advertisements in Iowa seeking undercover investigators who are committed to Mercy for Animals' objective, which is to eradicate the food animal system. And we believe they are willing to take any measure to destroy that system.
Also supporting this bill is the Iowa Honey Producers. Their lobbyist is Jim Obradovich.
Unfortunately, over the past couple of years, you've seen many of the honey producers, big and small, have suffered a great amount of economic damage to the point of actually having their businesses, losing their businesses as a result of folks engaged in trespassing, mischief, however you want to describe it. This is very important to those folks. It's not necessarily just important to what you consider traditional livestock. Agriculture in Iowa also includes the production of honey.
From the American Civil Liberties Union, lobbyist Daniel Zeno says, like the 2012 law that's now being appealed in the courts, he is concerned with what this bill means for free speech.
What this law bill would do is say, if you lie, if you use speech to lie to get employment, you could be guilty of a crime. We're criminalizing speech. And so to the extent that this bill criminalizes speech, we oppose it, and we urge you not to pass it so that there won't be any more litigation.
The ACLU was a co-plaintiff in suing the state of Iowa over the 2012 law. Zeno says if a bill like the one being proposed becomes law, a new lawsuit from them would be considered.
Our goal is not to undermine the security, the protection of agricultural facilities, right? That's an important interest. That is an important interest. It's a big industry in Iowa, but we can't do that by taking away free speech.
Representative Klein says he understands there is concern about free speech with this bill.
But we have to emphasize these are people that are being deceitful, that we have written in here there has to be intent to cause harm. And in an agriculture state with a lot of livestock and the biosecurity concerns we had, I think that's probably one of the biggest things to point out is the economic harm that there are people want to do to production agriculture in the state of Iowa, the lifeblood of our economy.
The three members of this House panel signed to advance the bill. A few hours later, the same bill comes before a Senate Agriculture Subcommittee, with many of the same organizations restating their positions. It is also signed to advance by this three-member panel. Later during the full Senate committee, it is approved by a 9-4 vote, and it makes it past the final deadline. This week, legislators have been involved in many subcommittees, especially senators. Sometimes they have four in a single day. In the Senate State Government Subcommittee, Republican Senator Jake Chapman chairs a bill that would prevent someone from being paid state money to be a full-time lobbyist.
The fact that we have taxpayer money being spent on lobbyists to lobby against the taxpayer is a sham that's happening here in the state of Iowa. And I'm sick and tired of seeing these different taxpayer-funded lobbyists coming down here and doing what they think is in the best interest of the client who's hired them, but they fail to recognize who's paying their bill.
Jim Henter from the Iowa Retail Federation supports this idea.
I will tell you that I'm kind of tired of fighting against cities and counties when they are fighting us on ordinances, they're fighting us on zoning issues. What a day for this. We have going on today the Des Moines-Dallas County money grab again that people get to vote on and go take another swipe at a bunch of money that they're supposedly going to use for property tax relief, etc.
Henter is talking about an election that is happening on this day for Des Moines and adjoining cities. It would increase the sales tax by 1 cent. It did pass, but this is not an issue related to the Iowa legislature. Erica Eckley is from the Iowa Hospital Association. Some hospitals in that association receive public money. She says hiring people that understand and work with legislators is important.
Individuals who have expertise in those issues to help with the legislature, having somebody that has that expertise requires a level of detail and understanding that I think this does cause some concerns if that would be limited.
Robert Palmer from the League of Cities also says experts are important when navigating legislative issues.
What our concern would be making would be removing the voice that cities have to be able to communicate with you all about the impacts of legislation and how the decisions that are made up here will impact them locally. So we'd want to make sure that that voice is still able to be speaking.
Democratic Senator Pam Yoakum is a subcommittee panelist. She questions language in the bill as to whether or not it would be a person paid to be a full-time lobbyist.
I'm reading the bill, and it says a government entity shall not employ a person through the use of its public funds whose position with the government entity is primarily representing the governmental entity relative to pass-throughs, defeat, etc. So, what is the definition of primarily representing? Is it 50%? What is it?
Senator Chapman says if a person is spending more than 50% of their time on lobbying efforts, the restriction in this bill would apply. But he wants to go further.
I want to strengthen this, and so I will be pushing forward an amendment to address that, because the point of this bill is to eliminate taxpayer-funded lobbyists. Now, if we want liaisons, I'm fine with liaison, and I view a lobbyist and a liaison completely different. A lobbyist purpose is to come down here and advocate for or against a piece of legislation. A liaison is there to inform and provide information.
This bill does not affect private companies hiring lobbyists, only departments using public funds. Chapman says this bill is important because there is a difference between a person supporting a private organization to lobby versus a citizen who pays taxes.
I can't disenfranchise or take myself out of that expenditure. Whereas if I'm a member of the NRA, I can quit paying dues if I want to quit paying dues or, you know, disassociate myself from that organization. This, again, is public money. It is taxpayer money. And far too often we're seeing bills down here where the lobbyist who's being paid for by the taxpayer is lobbying against the very best interest of the taxpayer.
This bill advances from the subcommittee with two Republicans signing. Later, during a full committee meeting, the bill is approved. It is now ready to be debated by the full Senate. This is the weekly legislative podcast, Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pimble. It's our eighth episode of Under the Golden Dome for 2019. We are at what is likely the middle point of this session. The final deadline you are hearing about applies to most bills. Again, it means a bill has to pass out of either a full Senate or full House committee to move forward. There are exceptions, like if a bill has money attached to it, like a tax bill or one that requires funding. And some bills have a shot at coming up in a different committee that may be exempt from the funnel. Here's a recap of some of the bills we've talked about in the past 2 months. Changing how justices make their way to the bench is moving forward. The bill changes how a nominating commission is selected. The nominating commission chooses candidates to be considered to be a justice on the Iowa Supreme Court. Half of the members of this nominating commission are elected by Iowa lawyers. The bill would allow legislative leaders to choose new nominating members instead. A bill that would establish a board to review possible incidents of racial profiling by police officers during a traffic stop is not moving forward. The Senate Judiciary Chair, Republican Senator Brad Zahn, is a proponent of this bill for 2 years now, but he doesn't have the votes in the committee and he isn't bringing it up. This is a common process for a chair if they know the bill doesn't have the votes. A bill moving forward would not allow an employer to prohibit their employees from making political contributions. It would ensure an employee can contribute whatever they want to whoever or whatever is involved in politics. Also moving forward is a bill that would allow someone to bring their gun in a car while dropping off their child at a public school. Sports betting didn't pass the funnel from a state government committee. Didn't have to because there is a sports betting bill in the Ways and Means Committee that isn't subject to the funnel. So sports betting is still in play. The bill stating candidates that lose a Democratic, Republican, or other party recognized by the state are prohibited to run as an independent didn't move forward as an individual bill, but it is now part of an omnibus bill about voting and elections that passed just one day before the final deadline, so it's still going. So is one that would allow a woman to purchase oral contraceptives from a pharmacist instead of first going to a doctor. And these constitutional amendments are still active, one that adds gun rights to the Iowa Constitution, another clarifying gubernatorial succession, one that would restore felons' voting rights, and one that says an Iowan does not have a right to an abortion. Also moving forward is a bill that would reinstate the death penalty. The last time this issue was debated in a chamber was in the 1990s. I'm John Pimble, your host for this weekly podcast, Under the Golden Dome. Help from our Statehouse reporter, Katerina Sestarik. She's reporting on many bills that are not part of this show. You should read her stories, which are on iowapublicradio.org. The press pool at the state capitol is always contributing something meaningful. I thank each of them for their conversations, tips, and advice. The stories on this show and the scripts are edited by Iowa Public Radio News Director Michael Leland. We have at least 8 more shows left, and they come to you through Google Play, iTunes, or directly from our website, iowapublicradio.org. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.